All right, our next speaker, Seth Berg with Texas AgriLife Extension, with a whole host of co-authors, will present a paper of the beltwide evaluation of the effect of 2,4-D drift on cotton.
All right, so similar to Dr. Morgan's study, this is a trial that was done across a lot of different states in cotton belt. Thank you for the introduction, Dr. Robertson, so we're going to get right into it. Just a brief overview. I'm sure this is not news to anybody about 2,4-D and what's coming out. So it's a synthetic auxin herbicide. It's been available since the 40s, and basically we've had issues with drift in cotton since the 40s. So it's a long-standing issue. Cotton's very sensitive to 2,4-D. There's been a lot of work that's been done in the past on this issue, and there's been two main findings in terms of what is influences the amount of injury or yield loss we get. And it's basically the rate of 2,4-D that's applied, so obviously higher rates of 2,4-D, more injury, more yield loss, and then the growth stage of cotton at the time it's exposed. So again, we have upcoming release of 2,4-D and anti-camo-resistant cotton cultivars, and as well as soybean. And if anybody was around for Dr. Coepper's talk, he expressed the amount of increase we might see in the use of these herbicides with this new technology. So that's kind of the basis of this study. So just a couple of visuals of what we typically see with 2,4-D injuries. So this is vegetative injury symptoms. On the left-hand side, that's a more mild symptom, some leaf curling. On the right, that's the more severe injury where you get a lot more leaf malformation, strapping of the leaves and epinasty in the petioles. But what we also see, and what's reported a little bit less, is injury later in the growth stages. So when it's exposed after flowering, we actually get damage to the reproductive structure. So you can see there, those small bulbs have that brown desiccated look to them, right beside leaves that have virtually no symptoms at all. A few other things that we see in cotton are split terminals there on the left, and then just an overall delay in maturity. So those center two rows in this right-hand side picture were exposed to 2,4-D. You can see the amount of unopened bulbs that are on those plants compared to those outer rows that did have or had no 2,4-D applied. So just to sort of summarize what's been done in the past, basically all of the injury, the damage, the reduction in height, and the greater amount of yield loss has been reported to occur when cotton is exposed to 2,4-D prior to bloom. And that later growth stages, once we get into the bloom stage and later maturing stages, are much less sensitive to 2,4-D in regards to yield loss. So given the timing of this study, we wanted to really get a look of the effect of 2,4-D across a wide variety of environments in the cotton belt. So we had locations in six different states across 2 years of the study. So we had North Carolina in 2014. We had Tifton, Georgia in 13 and 14. Moultrie, Georgia in 2013. Quincy, Florida. Missouri were in 2014. And then we had Starkville, Mississippi, then a North Texas, a New Deal, Texas location, and Snook, Texas, down in South Texas, across both years of the study. So 12 total locations across the two-year study. So sort of the details of what we were doing, we had two rates of 2,4-D that we applied. Both of these are fractions of the full rate. So the first one was 1/421st of the full rate, so that's representing a drift scenario. The second rate was 1/21st of the full rate, so that's representing more of a tank contamination or improper tank cleanout situation. So these two rates were applied at six different growth stages, four leaf, nine leaf, first bloom, and then 2, 4, and 6 weeks after first bloom. So again, we had 12 locations of this study. We really wanted to find some way to find a trend or a pattern and not look at 12 separate independent locations. So what we looked at was averaging all the treatments at each location and comparing them to the non-treated cotton at that site. So what we ended up with was getting a percent of non-treated yield at each location. So when we did that, we found that we had some pretty similarities between several locations. So we were able to group these into three groups, and each group contained four locations. So in group one, that's kind of our more mild yield loss group, which yielded between 85 and 100% of the non-treated. Group two is our more moderate yield loss group, so those treatments yielded between 75 and 84% of the non-treated. And then group three was our most severe group of locations, which averaged yield between 60 and 74% of the non-treated. So getting into these yield numbers, this is the group one yields. So going down the y-axis, that's percent of control yield. So the 100% line is the average control, the control yield at this for this group. And that green bar going across represents that control yield. At the bottom, we have our six different growth stages that we had 240 applications made. Each growth stage has a two rate. So that blue bar is the drift rate. The red bar is the tank contamination rate. So at the very bottom, I don't know if it's visible or not, you can see the locations that were included in this group. So in our group one, this is our mild yield loss group, we had both years of the New Deal Texas location, so North Texas. We had the Snook Texas location in 2013, and we had Starkville, Mississippi in 2014. So what we saw in this group is that we had a significant yield loss compared to the non-treated with the tank contamination rate at the four-leaf, nine-leaf, and first bloom stage. So the two-leaf after first bloom stage, while it's significantly lower than some of our other treatments, it was not lower than the non-treated. So again, just the significant yield loss at the first three growth stages. So moving on to group two, this is our more moderate yield loss group. So this was the Florida location, the Snook, Texas location in 2014, and then both years of the location in Tifton. So in group two, we had a significant yield loss compared to control with the tank contamination rate at all growth stages except for the very last one. So everything except for the 6 weeks after first bloom lost yield compared to control. And we also had yield loss when with the drift rate when it was applied at first bloom. We had our most severe yield loss in this group occurring at the first bloom stage followed by 2 weeks after first bloom. And now moving to group three, so this is the most severe yield loss group. This was North Carolina, Moultrie, Georgia, Missouri, and then 2013 in Starkville, Mississippi. So in this group, we had a yield loss compared to control with every treatment except for 4 and 6 weeks after first bloom with the drift rate and 6 weeks after first bloom with a contamination rate. Our most severe yield loss again occurred at first bloom and also at nine leaf. So back to all the groups. This is looking at all 12 locations, just sort of an overview of what we saw. We have our different growth stages going down the y-axis. Again, the red bar is the contamination rate. The blue bar is the drift rate. So what we're looking at here is the frequency in which these treatments led to significant yield loss. So that's a percentage of the trials at the very bottom. So what we see is that the tank contamination rate applied to the nine-leaf growth stage had a significant yield loss at all 12 of our locations. This was followed by the contamination rate at four leaf, first bloom, and 2 weeks after first bloom. So switch this to the average yield loss we saw. So this is the average yield loss when these treatments were significant. In this case, the tank contamination rate at first bloom was the highest. So we lost over 2,500 pounds per acre with that treatment when it was significant. This was followed by the tank contamination rate at 2 weeks after first bloom and at nine leaf. I do want to point out that the four leaf drift rate does show up there as being high. We only had one location out of the 12 in which we had a yield loss in that treatment. So that's a high bar, but it only occurred one out of 12 times. So another way to look at this is just looking at all of the treatments we had. So on the left-hand side, that pie chart showing 144 growth stage and rate treatment combinations we had in this study. So 53% of the time, we had no yield loss. 35% of the time, we had yield loss due to the tank contamination rate. 12% of the time, we had yield loss due to the drift rate. Now, looking at just the times when we lost yields, so just the 68 treatments or instances in which we did have a yield loss compared to the non-treated, the vast majority of the time, the take contamination rate was responsible. So 75% compared to 25% that was due to the drift rate. So just a few more visuals. This is taken about a week to a week and a half prior to harvest. That picture on the left is the contamination rate applied at first bloom. The picture on the right is the contamination rate applied at 2 weeks after first bloom. So compared to the outer rows, so of course the center two rows are our treatment rows. If you look outside of those, the borders are non-treated. So you see it's just a general delay in maturity, a lot more green plant material on the plants, a lot fewer open molds with those 2,4-D treatments. This is taken the day of harvest. On the left is non-treated. On the right is contamination rate at first bloom. Again, a pretty obvious visual sign that we're delaying maturity and a lot fewer open molds with those 2,4-D treatments. So when we talk about herbicides and trying to evaluate injury on crops, obviously visual injury ratings are a general standard, and this is particularly true with 2,4-D, as there's some really typical, obvious, unique visual injury symptoms we see with 2,4-D. So what we want to look at was maximum injury. We had a lot of different cooperators in the study, so we want to look at when did injury peak for these different treatments. The first thing that really stuck out is that the maximum injury ratings were consistently higher in our treatments that were applied prior to first bloom. And with the exception of group one, our injury ratings really did not predict yield loss. So just for an example, in group two, so that was our moderate yield loss group, we had a peak injury or a max injury of the four-leaf treatment of 74% injury. So 74 was our highest injury rating. That treatment resulted in a 34% yield loss. The highest injury rating we saw when it was applied at first bloom in that group was 41% injury. However, that treatment resulted in an 81% yield loss. Moving to group three, same general thing. We had a 77% max injury with a non-leaf stage. That treatment lost 77% of the yield compared to control. We had a 45% injury, max injury, in first bloom, which resulted in a 79% yield loss. So you can see that the injury ratings that we're seeing prior to first bloom and after first bloom aren't really correlating with the yield losses, particularly for our most severe growth stages. It's not really lining up. And I think the pictures here sort of make it a little bit easier to imagine. The top picture is what we're seeing with injury and applications prior to first bloom. So it's a very obvious visual injury symptom. You know there's going to be some severe, well, it looks like there's going to be some very severe yield loss. The bottom picture is what we see when we have applications after first bloom. So if you look at just the visual leaf symptoms that you're used to seeing with 2,4-D, you don't really see anything. You look at the small balls and they have that desiccated look to them, but it's not the typical symptom we think about in terms of 2,4-D. So again, just some more pictures. Top two pictures, symptoms we see when it's applied prior to first bloom. The leaf curling, the strapping, more severe cases, the petioepinasty. On the bottom, after first bloom symptoms. So hardly any, if any, leaf symptoms at all, but we have that brown desiccated look to the balls. The two bottom pictures, those treatments are going to lose, in our case, in our study, we had a lot more severe yield loss with those treatments than we did the injury symptoms we saw in the top two pictures. So we're looking at conclusions, what we got out of this study. First one's not really a shocker. We saw more yield loss with a high rate of 2,4-D, and it accounted for the majority of instances in which we had a yield loss occurring. What was in contrast to a lot of the previous work is that we saw the most severe yield loss occurring around the first bloom growth stage. So non-leaf first bloom and 2 weeks after first bloom were our most sensitive growth stages in regards to yield loss basically across the board. And that our visual injury ratings did not reflect yield loss, particularly at our most sensitive stages like first bloom and 2 weeks after first bloom. So now looking at where do we go from here? So obviously this work raised more questions than answers, and more work needs to be done in this area. Adding in dicamba as well, as it's another technology that's going to be out around the same time, if not sooner. And then further examination of that environmental effect. So I said in the beginning that two main factors that influence yield loss are growth stage at time of exposure and the rate of 2,4-D. Well, we also kind of saw an environmental effect, particularly when you look at the locations that had 2 years of the study and 1 year went into group one, and the other year went into group two. So we were breaking out by location as well. So there's something else going on there. Perhaps it's a short versus long season environmental impact, low versus high yield potential influence. So just further examination of that. And also really determine methods for evaluating injury or predicting yield loss, or determining if there is a way to evaluate that, particularly when we see exposure after flowering or into the bloom stage. Using that boll injury symptom as some sort of a predictor or boll number. So, again, I'd like to acknowledge all the co-authors. This is a belt-wide project. There were a lot of people involved, and they did the majority of the work. Appreciate them and their cooperators and all the funding for all the locations. And if there's any time, I'd be glad to take any questions.
Thank you, Seth.